the smartest show in the Bay Area?
You guys are an intellectual feast for the smart sports fan in the Bay Area.
Wow.
You're pretty much the smartest guys on the radio.
I agree.
Good Lord, how big is your ego?
Are they the funniest show in the Bay Area?
Give it a laugh. Come on. You're a funny guy. Come on. Give me a laugh.
You are funny, dude.
Hit that ass again.
Are they the coolest show in the Bay Area?
And no white boys. They cool.
That's what people are saying.
You guys are phenomenal.
This is one of the most perfect ways that I could end my day, getting the chance to talk to Mr. Mark and Dan, you know?
We'll let you be the judge.
Oh.
All I know is it's a couple of Bay Area boys talking sports.
I know nothing.
Thanks.
It's Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
LFG.
Let's go.
Let's do this. Best day of the week. Come on.
Best day of the week.
Here we freaking go, okay?
We're here, and we're going to be here tomorrow. And It is seasonally. You're actually kind of right because fantasy starts. All your pick pools start. We got a game coming up in about 3 hours.
We got Bills and Dolphins.
You get 17 of these best day of the week. And then the other 35, you're on your own. But
whatever.
I'm going to buy it right now. Best day of the week. Let's do this. Set your lineup.
Come on.
Get your picks in.
2 hours and 45 minutes till fade the Dibbers.
Dude, I'm fired up. And you know what? At your own risk.
Three in a row?
The pick is already in. I'll save it for 5 o'clock.
Dolphins minus 2.5 is the number. I feel really good
about this one.
Wow.
This one feels like Locktoberfest a couple weeks early.
I can't wait. For you fantasy football players, this is a big one. This one's just dripping with all kinds of people y'all drafted. And so, this will be fun. And we'll have some fun leading up to that. And oh, by the way, 45 minutes from now, we're super excited about this. Brian Hoyer is going to be on the show. Actually, I just lied. 20 minutes.
Wow.
Bad math. I don't know why in my head I was thinking he's on at 3. He's going to be on at 2:30.
I wish you weren't a liar.
Yeah. Sorry. I lied. My bad. But I made up for it.
Brian Hoyer.
Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
Who
played for Shanahan.
Not only played for Shanahan.
Didn't win for Shanahan.
No, he did not. But I've been listening to some of his stuff, and he really, really has an interesting take on the 49ers, on Kyle Shanahan, on Brock Purdy. We'll talk to him about all of it. Brian Hoyer recently in the league, and yes, a Kyle Shanahan quarterback once upon a time. And in fact, he'll explain why he recently said he used to find it at times very, very uncomfortable.
Right.
Playing for Kyle Shanahan. So that's coming up in 20 minutes. Cannot wait for that. But we want to put it out to you right away. 888-957-9570 is the number. What a perfect day to have this conversation. I've been waiting. I've been waiting all week for this. Maybe not all week because the Niners didn't play till Monday. But I've been waiting since Tuesday morning to put this out there. Because indeed, the 49ers did play without Christian McCaffrey. You and I have already gone 12 rounds through the years on who is the most important 49er. In other words, if you could bubble wrap someone and promise that they'd be healthy all year for the 49ers, who would it be? And I think what a great day to ask it now that the guy who was, for many of you, the answer to this question, didn't play, might not play again, and the Niners point total was the exact damn same thing that it was in all the games last year as well. In fact, I think, what'd they end up averaging? What, about 29.5?
Yep, just shy.
All right, 32 points without the guy who supposedly is the straw that stirs the drink. So I'm going to put an all caps word in the question. Now who's the most important 49er?
Now. Going into week two, now.
You could say it's the same person I thought before. It's still Christian McCaffrey. But a great time to ask this because now, for the first time, we watched it without Christian. So Now who's the most important 49er?
It's the same answer that I gave last year, and we did 12 rounds on it, and I actually had Brock Purdy early on last year. Maybe this time last year I had him as like 5 or 6.
7th, I believe, came out of your mouth.
I don't even know if I went to 7.
I think you were being sarcastic, but you said
I don't think I went interior O-line. I might have put Kittle ahead of him, and McCaffrey, and Debo, and Ayuk, and certainly the guy who I still think is the most important guy on this offense, and it's Trent Williams. Right. And it's not only because of what I saw Monday night, but I went back and I was just digesting tape, Mark, over the time since I left you at 6 o'clock yesterday. I rewatched the game last year against Minnesota, and you know what? Trent didn't play. And the offensive line, they had problems. They had 99 problems, and Trent's injury was one. Mm-hmm. And Minnesota's defense, they totally snuffed out the run. They made things uncomfortable for Brock. And I think that this year, yes, you're going to have Debo. You didn't last year. McCaffrey, yay or nay, we don't know yet at this point. But Trent Williams and what he does for this offensive line, he still, for me, is the most important player.
888-957-9570. What if I put out a multiple choice of sorts,
okay,
if you will, just because? Because, you know, someone's going to call up and say D'Amador Lenore, and so, like, let's whittle this down a little bit.
Okay.
And you tell me if this is covering the bases. Am I leaving anyone out? I think these are the answers that you can get away with and have an intelligent response. And that is, now who's the most important 49er? Is it Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, Trent Williams, which is the point you just made, Nick Bosa, Fred Warner, or other?
Okay, or okay? Other.
Or yeah. Other. Because someone might want
Isaac Yiadom.
Yeah, or well, someone might say Debo.
Yeah.
Someone could say Debo. And
Dominic Pooney.
He's pretty good.
He's damn good.
Pretty good, yep. Right? I think that covers the bases, because now we have something that we never had before. Brock Purdy went out there on Monday without Christian McCaffrey, and let's be real, about 58% of Brandon Ayuk.
Yep.
Or whatever. And the offense still moved, and completions still happened, and poof, Jawan Jennings suddenly had 5 catches for 64 yards. When I thought he was only allowed to get 4 yards for a catch on 3rd and 3, all of a sudden he can get downfield and do some things. I don't even need to say my answer. You all know, if you've been to the show for more than 2 seconds, you know what my answer is to this. And it's not even really a fair question. If you've got a good quarterback, that's always the answer. It's always the answer. Vegas will tell you that the biggest point spread mover on the team, even though it's lesser than some other teams, is the quarterback. Christian McCaffrey was announced out. The spread went from 4.5 to 3.5. If Brock Purdy had been announced out, I'm not sure the Niners would have still been favored. In fact, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have been if he had gotten announced out an hour before kickoff. So, like, you ask it this way. I'd ask you it this way, since you said Trent Williams. What do you think is a better football team? Brandon Allen and Trent Williams, or Brock Purdy and Jalen Moore?
Brendan Allen and Trent Williams.
Yeah, you and I disagree on that.
Yeah, and yeah. It's not any disrespect to Brock Purdy, but it just speaks to what I think is the number one strength of this team, and it's Kyle Shanahan and the scheme. And you saw it on Monday night where you went to a guy who had never started a football game before, and you gave him 28 totes, and he was dominant. It's not to say that Jordan Mason's not a good player. He is obviously a good player. He's your backup running back. But what Kyle Shanahan did and what Trent Williams did in that O-line is they created massive holes, and he was able to run through them because he's a running back. And that's what you do when you're a running back. You see the hole, and when the hole is 5 yards wide, you run to the hole. It's not to say that Mason wasn't good and Brock was, he was fine. He was probably better than fine, although I'm being told some experts also gave him a B alongside Mark Grandy, who gave him a B. So there are some people out there who thought
B plus.
That, B plus. Yeah. I apologize.
The word experts is subjective, but anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, the person who gave him a B is, you know, considered one of the elite people on the beat. But I look at what this team did last year against Minnesota. You had Brock. You had kind of McCaffrey. He was probably 75% with the oblique. You didn't have Debo. And you had a hard time. You didn't have Trent, and that to me is the big issue.
Yeah, although when I see Kirk Cousins throw for almost 400 yards, my mind doesn't go to all of these offensive players. That game, and here's where you and I agree, that game is when Steve Wilks lost his job. I don't know exactly what was going on.
I can honestly say I'm kind of fired.
Exactly. Kyle Shanahan, week six, right after the game, comes out and goes, Steve knows he messed up. And that was the moment I was like, and we've talked about it so much. Like, he said that into a microphone?
Right.
Holy hell, what are they saying behind the closed doors? There's ferocity here between these two. And then they did the rest of the season, and they did their best, and 4 seconds after it was over, they relieved Steve Wilks of his duties. And you can be mad about that or whatever, but those two were not eye to eye. That was very, very clear to me after the game against Minnesota last year. Before we go to the calls, I just want to say this for 20 seconds.
Do it.
The answer can be any of these, because obviously the 49ers are immediately worse when any of them leave the field.
Agreed.
So I don't think anything's crazy if you or I or disagree or whatever. Obviously, they're lesser without Trent. Obviously, they're lesser without a Debo or a Fred or a Nick. Obviously, a Brock and a Christian McCaffrey. But if you ask me, can you function for, you know, XYZ without said person? I mean, I'll go to my grave with, dude, Moody hit a kick and then you win in Cleveland. And now how we do? You're out.
Moody hit a kick, maybe you win in Minnesota.
Exactly.
And I was watching it back today, and they finally had gotten something going on offense, and he had, I think it was a 40-yarder, and he just gacked it. And that was the moment where it was like, oh, God, we've been up against it this whole time. McCaffrey fumbled at, like, the 18-yard line.
Yep.
You get
zone.
The ball back. You drive down. Okay, we're going to get points. We're back in this game. And he missed it, and it wasn't that close. And that's where you thought, oh, God, we got real problems here today.
I mean, the funny thing is
Monday Night Football.
I think a lot of us as sports fans have a hard time with this idea of team. We love to do this. It's our NBA brain, right? Who's the individual that can go out there
totally.
And do it by himself? Well, the answer's none of them. None of them. But we have a hard time with this, like, no, they're married and it's a good marriage. And then we go, oh, well, it's all because of Kyle. Brady Belichick. Well, it's all, you know, it's all because of Brady, or it's all because of Bill or whatever. It's never all because of anyone. but the answer is Brock Purdy. I mean, the answer is Brock Purdy.
Yeah, I disagree.
I know, but you do.
You know, we can get into it. That's a little bit of a buzzer beater for you, so I'll hold my retort for the other side.
Okay, we're sponsored by Safeway.
Yeah, we are.
And we see a lot of you. If you want to weigh in on this, let's ride. Who's the most important 49er now after Monday night? 888-957-9570. And we're going full bore on your calls and bringing Brian Hoyer into the conversation coming up next on Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, that's right. Good memories. Very good memories.
Great memories.
Glad you guys are with us. The 49ers are off and running. The Minnesota Vikings will take center stage as we move toward the weekend. But with Christian McCaffrey out on Monday, possibly out on Sunday, it's a little how you like me now with the idea of, okay, who's the most important 49er now? Because many of you have said McCaffrey, you might still. But the other multiple-choice answers we put together, Brock Purdy, Trent Williams, Nick Bosa, Fred Warner, or other. So let's talk it out. And Brian Hoyer, former Niner quarterback under Shanahan, who's really good on this stuff. Wait till you hear what he has to say. It's great. We're going to have him on in just a couple of minutes. But let's go to Sean in Fremont. Hi, Sean. Thank you for calling. What's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? So for me, it's Bosa, and I'll tell you why. I mean, you could really argue Trent Williams, and it'd be tough for me to argue against you. But it's Bosa for me because I don't think you can beat the elite teams in this league in the playoffs without a top-notch pass rusher. And I think Bosa is that. Like, I don't think you can ever beat the Chiefs in a Super Bowl, say it's the Chiefs, without Bosa. That's just for me. And one more thing. I was the guy that called last week about going to Jordan-Hare Stadium. Or Jordan Hare, I should say. And Auburn minus 13, no good, dude.
No
good. That ain't good. And congrats to your Cal Bears, Sean. They're cooking 2-0 with a win at Auburn. It should be pointed out.
You know it. You tell the story.
Yeah.
You tell the whole damn world that the Southeast is bear territory.
This is bear territory.
Yeah, exactly.
No doubt.
No, that's good. No, it's not a bad answer. I know that there are a lot of coaches out there that'll tell you, hey, we need a pass rush. You got to have an elite edge rusher. So sure. Things would not be nearly as sound on the defensive side if Nick Bosa wasn't drawing so much attention.
Agreed. And, you know, you saw Leonard Floyd really reap the benefits of playing with Nick Bosa. He was a big factor in the first turnover, the punch out from Fred Warner. He forced that shovel pass early, and he was a big factor in the second turnover where he had the pressure and he had a sack as well. So he's definitely benefiting from the gravity, so to speak, that Nick Bosa provides. But for me, it still is that big left tackle. He's the only guy on your team who is a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer.
I agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. 888-957-9570. We're going to keep taking your reaction to that. So who's the most important 49er now? But we're going to pause that conversation to talk to someone who used to be a 49er and longtime quarterback throughout the league. Pleased to have him here on the River Islands guest line on Willard and Dibs. Thank you so much, Brian Hoyer, for joining us. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're fantastic. I would love for you to share with our audience, because I've saw some of your recent comments on just in terms of the way football is usually called. What are the difficulties as a quarterback in playing for Kyle Shanahan?
Well, I think for me, I played for Kyle twice, once in Cleveland and then another time in San Francisco. And just calling the plays the second time around was much easier because it was so different from what I had been accustomed to. And so I remember in Cleveland, you know, that first year trying to, one, I was coming back off of a torn ACL, but just trying to get the terminology, you know, under my belt, so to speak. And I remember, you know, when I came to play for Kyle out in San Francisco, you know, the second time around was much easier, but it can be wordy. And then I think, you know, a lot of people have touched on it. I think a lot of people see the clip of John Gruden getting after Chris Sims all those years ago and think, oh man, you know, that's a tough play call. And I, you know, similar system, obviously it's evolved over the years, but you know, any offense you play in, there's going to be, you got to be able to tell people what to do. And you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, so to speak. And you could do it in multiple different ways. And, you know, but it was something with repetition and time, you get to understand it. And I always give Kyle a hard time because I always ask him if I could wear a wristband with the plays. And he's like, man, I have a hard time calling it that way because sometimes I'm not looking down at my call sheet to call the play. I call it from my head. And then, you know, the trade happens with Jimmy Garoppolo. And a few weeks later, I'm sitting there watching and Jimmy's got a wristband on. And I texted Kyle, I'm like, what the hell? I could have used that, you know? But, you know, in that situation, Jimmy had only been there for a few weeks, so I understand it, and you know, sometimes you have to adapt.
It's a fantastic vignette right there because Jimmy G always had the play sheet on the wrist. You mentioned wordiness of the play call, and you also have spoken about the rigidity of what Kyle wants. Is that really where Brock Purdy excels? Is he takes the play call and he knows exactly where Kyle wants him to throw it, or the secondary option, or the tertiary?
Well, I think Kyle's had Brock from his infancy stage in the NFL. And clearly, I mean, look, they drafted Brock with Jimmy on the roster, with Trey Lance, who they traded up. And so clearly Kyle saw something in that pre-draft process that he really liked about Brock Purdy in order to draft him with that last pick. And I think, you know, I saw some people in my comments on my Twitter, or I guess it's called X now, they were trying to say that I was bashing Brock by what I said on Peter Schrager's podcast. And if anything, I was complimenting him because I don't think there's ever been a quarterback who's fit better with Kyle Shanahan than Brock Purdy. And I think that comes from him being there day one with Kyle, and Kyle, you know, just sitting down with him and saying, hey, on this play, on C.O. Bow, this is the read. And no matter what it is, this is what it's going to be. No matter what the coverage is, this is how I want you to read it. And so he's had him, you know, from the very first moment he stepped into rookie training camp and training him that way. And Brock just understands it better than any other person who's ever played for Kyle. And that's pretty clear. And I think, you know, they're just so symbiotic. And that's why I try to say, you know, when I say he's Kyle's avatar out there, Kyle is one of the premier offensive minds to ever coach football. And he sees it in a very unique way. totally, I was privileged enough to play for Kyle. I learned so much from him, but very different from a Josh McDaniels, who I learned a ton from him, and a Bill O'Brien or a North Turner. And I think it takes a very special quarterback to understand that and see it through his eyes. And I think that's what you've seen with Brock Purdy. That's exactly how Kyle wants the game to be played. And yes, things happen and he's off schedule and he makes some great plays. But when I watch Brock and I watch those games, I'm like, man, I wish I could have played like that in that system, because he does it exactly how Kyle's asking him to do. And he has full trust that Kyle's going to get the right play called at the right time.
Brian Hoyer is with us here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. This is fascinating stuff. And Brian, I wonder what you can share about this, because I know you weren't there, but Purdy was known as kind of a gunslinger mentality in college. And now he gets to the 49ers, and you're saying he's been molded perfectly. So your best guess on how Kyle Shanahan was able to sort of get Brock to change his own mold to now become this?
Well, I think you still see it. You see, I mean, look, the NFL is not a perfect world, and no matter how you draw up a perfect play, there's times where it breaks down, and you see that with Brock and using his athleticism, escaping out of the pocket, making throws. And so I think, you know, as it's kind of a compliment really to Brock and the person that he is, to come in and say, listen, I'm going to just soak it all in. I'm going to learn as much as I can. And if the play, you know, happens in the timing of the play and I go through my reads, and I remember, you know, I'd never basically been in a system where you tied the reads to your drops. And I remember doing these drills with Kyle, and he's like, all right, on your first hitch, I want you to throw the curl. On your second hitch, I want you to get down to the back. And when I watch Brock play and the offensive line has given him time, he's a very much of a rhythm passer and playing in that rhythm. But also, you've mentioned this gunslinger mentality. If things don't go correctly, it's not like he's a statue in there and is going to just sit there and take a sack. Like, he moves around, he can run the ball, he scrambles, makes some good throws. So, like I said, I mean, clearly the guy, you know, is made of a great makeup, because he was the last pick in the draft, and, you know, last year he's in the Super Bowl. So, you know, just one of those great stories, and clearly he's determined to get better and better each year, and he's got a great coach leading him the way.
How important is his pre-snap work to the Kyle Shanahan offense? Because you talk about how complicated the play calls are, and then when you get to the line of scrimmage, everything kind of shuts down. How important is it that he's able to kind of decipher what the coverage is going to be before the snap?
Well, I think, you know, I just mentioned two different, you know, great offense coordinators, Kyle Shanahan, Josh McDaniels, and I would say, you know, Josh was very much about pre-post-snap reads and more so post-snap reads, and I would say Kyle was more, here's the play call, here's the pre-snap read, and this is not going to change post-snap. You're going to go left to right on this play or whatever it might be. And so two very different ways to look at it. And I think, you know, I remember Kyle always saying, like, the quarterback has so much to do. I want to take something off of this plate. And so, you know, in that system, it's basically these long play calls. But once the play's called, it's kind of get up there, let the line make the calls, snap the ball, and run the play. Whereas, you know, when I played for a guy like Josh McDaniels, It's calling multiple plays in the huddle. You got to give a pre-snap look, a post-snap look, and things are changing a lot. So, you know, like you said, a ton of different ways to do it. And the reality is, no one's really reinventing the wheel. The plays are the plays, and then you kind of put your own spin on them. And I even look at, you know, when I watched that game the other night, Kyle's offense has evolved so much from where it was when I played with him in Cleveland to where it was when I played with him in San Francisco to where it is now. And he's really good at adapting to the playmakers that he has. So you have a guy like Debo, Christian McCaffrey's out, you throw him in the backfield and hand him the ball off. And, you know, you have the Swiss Army knife, one of my favorite teammates of all time that I play with in the San Francisco, and Kyle Juszczyk, and he came up with a big pass the other night. And he allows them to do so many different things, and Kyle knows how to use them to his advantage.
Brian Hoyer is with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Brian, give it to us dummies in a way that we can understand, because you said already that Kyle Shanahan sees football differently than anybody else. How would you expand on that to someone who may not understand football at the level that you do?
Well, I think from my understanding and my experiences, I've never seen a guy who is a play caller that's watching things on the defense and making minute by minute, second by second adjustments. And I know a lot's been made about, you know, the West Coast run game and the wide zones and the boots and things like that. And, you know, I remember asking him, you know, how are you determining when to do that? And he goes, well, I'm watching the end. I'm watching these things in real time. And then that's kind of leading me to go to whatever the next play I want to go with is. If I see the linebackers are getting up in the line of scrimmage, I'm going to go to a play action pass and things like that, as opposed to, you know, a lot of offensive coordinators have their call sheet and they kind of have, here's my second and five plays. Here's my third down plays. Here's my play action passes. I think Kyle is so good at coming up with that game plan that when it comes to game day, a lot of times you see him calling those plays. He's not even looking down at a call sheet. He has those calls figured out. And I always joke, he would be in pregame, he'd lock himself in some kind of water closet and he'd go over the entire game plan and you'd have to go find him in the back of, you know, some little spot in the back of the locker room and he'd be going over the game plan. And sure enough, you know, he knew it so well that he could call a lot of those plays without ever looking down at his sheet.
It's incredible to watch as a novice. You know, Mark and I are radio hosts. We never played in the NFL, but I watch what he does with Kyle, not Kyle Shanahan, but Kyle Juszczyk. Can you expand just on how he uses the fullback and why that's such an edge for Kyle Shanahan and the way he calls offense?
Well, that position is kind of a dying breed, other than Kyle Juszczyk, as you mentioned, and then a guy that I've played with in a few different places, Jakob Johnson. I mean, there's not very many of those guys left. And the one thing that makes it so unique with Kyle Juszczyk is he's probably the most athletic fullback that's probably ever played the game, and he can do things that most fullbacks can't, and Kyle understands that, but defenses also have to respect when he's out there that he could also be a lead blocker. And then the next thing you could do is you can send him down the sideline on wheel route like they did against the Jets the other night. So Kyle, I think, has a great understanding of how to use guys with unique skill sets. I mean, obviously we've seen it with Debo, you know, over the progression of his career in the backfield, out at wide receiver, on reverses, on all these things. And Kyle, you know, you can see the evolution of what his offensive scheme has been. Like I mentioned, from, you know, going back even to when he was in Washington with RG3 and running some of those quarterback runs. And so he's very good at adapting to what his players do really well.
So, Brian, I'm sure you've answered this before. At the risk of it being played out, I do want to hear your answer. When someone says to you, Brock Purdy, system quarterback, what's your response?
Well, I'm going to say something that's probably even more controversial. I think every quarterback's a system quarterback. It depends on what system you're in. You know, I played a long time with Tom Brady, and he, that system developed around him. And to be honest with you, no other quarterback's ever been able to run that system as well as he did. And guys like Matt Stafford have been in different systems. So when people say system quarterback, I go, well, what does that even mean? So to say Brock Purdy's a system quarterback, I say he's a successful quarterback because he's running the system that the coach is asking him to run. Now, are certain guys maybe not fit because of their, you know, is a guy like Jalen Hurts or Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen, you know, maybe they have different abilities, and it goes to like what Kyle does with his skill players. I think good offensive coordinators see, what does my quarterback do well, and I'm going to kind of fit it around that. So, you know, when I kind of laugh at that when people say system quarterback, because first of all, the people who usually say that don't even know what the systems are. And so for people to say that's good, bad, and different, I really don't think they understand what they're talking about to begin with.
Yeah, they disparage quarterbacks with the system label, but you're right. Any good quarterback is a system quarterback. But Mark and I always debate about like what Kyle's favorite system would be. It feels like it's a 50-50 split with Brock Purdy. Would he be happier passing it more or running it more? What was your experience playing for him in terms of the run-pass mix?
I mean, Kyle loves the run game. He's obsessed with the run game. I used to sit in those run game meetings for 45, 50 minutes and have him as the head coach go over every single running play. And I remember thinking, like, man, in this offense, I don't even really have to do anything in the run game. Now, in other offenses, I got to make the mic point. I got to make an alert. I got to change, you know, tell everybody what the front is. But in the 49ers offense, there was very little to do other than maybe switching from one play to another. But he had the entire offense sit in there and listen to those run game meetings because I think he knew how important that was to his entire offense. And you see that. And I remember him telling me he learned a lot, you know, when he was in Atlanta, because they'd be playing the Carolina Panthers, and the Carolina Panthers' run defense was tough. And he said he used to abandon the run game a little too early, but then he realized, you know, in that scenario, you got to keep pushing it because even if you're only getting 2-3 yard runs, sometimes those 2-3 yard runs lead to 80 yard play action pass touchdowns. And so you kind of, he said, you know, I'll give that up to get some of those explosive plays in the pass game.
So Brian, your perspective on, can this particular group, can they consistently win without Christian McCaffrey if he misses more time?
Well, I mean, they showed it the other night, and the Jets' defense is no joke. I was talking about that on my SiriusXM radio show this morning with Solomon Wilcox. I mean, you expected the Jets' defense to come in and be a top-five defense, and they kind of tore those guys apart. And it's not, you know, unusual for a Shanahan-type system, you know, to kind of plug and play a running back, a guy that, you know, I didn't really know about before Monday night, and he rushes for, what was it, over 140 yards, Jordan Mason. So, you know, there's... that is kind of a testament to Kyle and who he is and what he's able to do. Obviously, Christian, you know, Offensive Player of the Year is, I mean, that probably was one of the most, you know, impressive trades of all time, because I think Kyle had a vision for what Christian McCaffrey could do in his offense. And obviously there's a connection there with Christian's dad, Ed, playing for Kyle's dad in Denver. So a little bit of a familiarity, but obviously, we've seen what Christian McCaffrey is capable of in that offense, and so hopefully he gets back sooner than later.
Just real quick, looking at Minnesota then, a team that really snuffed out the run last year in the meeting between these two teams. What does Kyle do to try to counteract a Minnesota front that sometimes has nine people on the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, they're an aggressive defense. They have a lot of good players. They actually spoke with Harrison Phillips this morning of the Vikings. He was on our show, and he just signed a new contract, and he's kind of that main guy in the front disrupting the run. And Brian Flores, who's the defensive coordinator, a guy that I know well from our time in New England together, is a very aggressive guy. And so this will be a battle for sure. I mean, the Vikings kind of laid the smackdown on the Giants last week defensively for sure. So it's, look, I mean, in the NFL, it's always a test, and I think the 49ers have an offense that's kind of clicking on all cylinders, which is always hard to do early in the season because everybody's kind of figuring each other out, but they have a lot of continuity, and I think it'll be a good matchup for them this weekend.
Brian Hoyer with us on 95.7 The Game. If that's your real name, hey, is your name actually Axel?
Yeah, it is. I got outed by my buddy Matt Slater a few years ago. My legal first name is Axel, and no, it's not because of Axel Rose or Axel Foley. My dad's actually from Germany, and his name is Axel. So everyone wants to think it's like Axel Rose, and I'm a big Guns N' Rose guy, which
right.
I enjoy the music, but that is not why I'm called that.
Well, so how did it end up that you went by Brian?
Right.
Well, I was firstborn, and so I think my dad wanted me to be a junior. And my mom said, well, he's my firstborn, too, and I want to name him Brian. So they compromised. My name, you know, legally is Axel, but my middle name is Brian. So
mom won out. What a shock.
Yeah, and it's still time to switch back. I mean, Axel's a pretty badass name now. I mean, now that you're...
It was as an adult, but I mean, you know, no one ever called me by it, and I actually thought about switching it at some point, and my dad was like, don't even, I mean, the ridicule that you might open yourself up to, because it is kind of a unique name, and I like it. I mean, it was reserved for people who knew me really well, and then a few years ago when I was making a start for the Patriots, Matt Slater, all-time great out here in New England, kind of outed it to the media, and then my secret was out.
All right, then we'll let you leave us with this. Who's a bigger badass, Axl Rose or Axel Foley?
Oh, I love Axel Foy. I love those Beverly Hills movies, so I'm going to go with him.
Yep, there it is. We got producers in the other room looking at us like, who's Axel Foley?
So
terrible. Yeah, I know.
And who's Axel Rose, whippersnappers?
Oh, man.
I got no idea. I mean, if you ever want to go into, like, professional wrestling, Axel Hoyer, you could wreck some people now.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I know. I think there's a new show with it on Netflix, I think. I thought I saw that when I was scrolling the other day.
I almost just called you Axel. Hey, Brian.
I only want to call him Axel.
Thank you so much for coming on, man. That was a blast.
No problem. Anytime.
All right. There he is. That's a good dude right there. That's Brian Hoyer.
That's Axel Hoyer to you and me.
Want a quick story?
Please.
Very quick story?
Yep.
That man right there has bought me a shot before.
What?
Yeah. Bought me a shot. Absolutely.
That's a big boo.
In Minnesota.
Because you don't do shots.
No, but I
traditionally.
I did that night. So Brian was like roomies with my former partner, Rich Ornberger.
Gotcha.
When the two of them played with the Patriots, they're very good friends. And so when I was with Rich, our show was out at the Super Bowl in Minnesota, which, by the way, there should not be people living there.
Right.
It's the coldest thing I've ever felt in my life. I don't know what the hell's going on. But
that's where my family's from.
Yeah, there are people there. It's crazy. There's buildings and everything. But anyway, we're out there having drinks. We didn't see that Brian, who I think was like second or third string with the Patriots, when this is the Nick Foles year. And so he's walking through a restaurant, and he sees me and Rich, like, whatever, you know, 40 yards away. Next thing you know, got a little wild turkey showing up at the table. We took care of it.
There you go.
It's no problem.
We handled it.
We didn't have to be anywhere in the morning. So it was fine.
Sneaky 15-year career for Axel Hoyer. Yeah. Including, and you hate to see it, but 0-6 with the Niners, and he would never win another game as a starter.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
The New England years, the Indy year, back to New England, even a year in Vegas last year.
Guy played for Shanahan, played for Belichick, like, knows a thing or two. And you can tell. So
played for McDaniel and D'Amico. They were on the staff when he was there. So the man knows some football.
Yes, he does. 888-957-9570. So back to you. And obviously the question we've been playing with. So now that Christian missed a game and the Niners still scored 32, now who's the most important 49er? Purdy? CMC? Trent? Bosa? Fred? Or other? Those of you on hold, we come to you immediately. Those of you not on hold, what are you doing? Get on hold. 888-957-9570. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. This is Willard and Dibbs.